UK Wine Show, show number 138. Organic wines in England. On this week's wine show, we're talking with Will Devonport from Devonport Wines. Will is one of only two commercial organic wine producers in the UK.
And in the news, red wine could increase omega-3s, Australian wine exports fall, and champagne sales hit Majestic.
G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 138 for the 9th of January, 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's wine show, we're talking with Will Devonport about organic winemaking in what must be one of the world's most inhospitable places for organic wine, the UK. In the spotlight, we review Oz Clark's book, Bordeaux, and this week's quote is, "For when the wine is in, the wit is out." Who said that? Clues throughout the show? Answer at the end. But next up, we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. A recent study by the Catholic University and Campobasso, Italy, has found that drinking one or two glasses of wine a day could increase the level of omega-3 fats in your blood. The study on 1,600 wine drinkers in Italy, England and Belgium found that the antioxidant compounds found in red wine, called polyphenols, may play a role in the way the body metabolises omega-3 fatty acids. Drinking wine may also boost the levels of HDL, or good cholesterol, improve the lining of your blood vessels, and reduce your risk of blood clots. The wine drinkers were found to have the highest levels of omega-3 compared to beer or spirit drinkers. And the moderate consumption of alcohol was defined as one drink a day for women and two drinks daily for men. This research was published in the January 2009 issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition.
The idea that red wine helps metabolise omega-3 is a very new idea, but the key research shows that people who drink red wine have higher levels of omega-3 in their bloodstream. Somehow, the red wine improves the absorption of omega-3, which is thought to add to blood circulation and reduce blood pressure. These are some of the mystery benefits of red wine, often attributed to resveratrol or prosiodine.
Next up, Australian wine exports slumped last year by 18% to 2.47 billion Aussie dollars, indicating the boom the wine industry has enjoyed since the mid-1990s may well be over. The fall was the first decline in value since exports began being recorded by the Australian Wine and Brandy Corporation, the AWBC. The value of wine exports to Britain fell 18.2% and to the US were down 26.5%. These are two of Australia's key export markets. The AWBC described 2008 as a year of two halves, with the first half dominated by a high Australian dollar and the second being impacted by the global economic crisis.
I don't think Australia has too much to worry about for 2009. Many small to medium southern hemisphere producers who ship wine to the UK once a year are in for a bonus. During September, October and November 2008, when wine from the southern hemisphere is usually sold to England, the pound was very strong against Chile, Australia, New Zealand and even Argentinian dollars, although it was starting to slide against Argentina by that stage. This means that the wines were relatively cheap. Since then, the pound has weakened quite a bit against all currencies. That means that wine that's about to be bought from Europe and North America from the 2008 vintage is going to be relatively expensive.
Finally this week, Majestic Wine has reported a 2.9% fall in like-for-like sales for the 10 weeks ending January the 5th, triggered by a fall in champagne sales to business customers who reined in their spending over the Christmas period. The chain saw modest growth amongst private customers, though they were still trading down from champagne to sparkling wine. Chief exec Steve Lewis said the company would be importing more wine from non-EU countries, such as New Zealand, Argentina and Chile, to combat the sterling's weakness against the euro. That's all from me this week, but don't forget you can get these stories at our website 3050.co.uk.
Thanks, Jane. Majestic's back up the line that European wines may not be good valued in the next year or so. The big hope for France is that the pound continues to strengthen. It's been up 10% in the last 10 days. One section of the market doing well is the sale of top-end Bordeaux by people in the UK trying to create a bit of spare cash. The cheap pound has meant that many Europeans have been snapping up the top chateaus at bargain basement prices. But which ones are good? Well, Oz Clark's book Bordeaux tries to highlight the top chateaus and why. Next up, we're going to review his book Bordeaux by Oz Clark. Bordeaux is Oz Clark's first wine love, and reading this book, it still sounds like it's his main love. Oz's silky prose wraps you up like a 2000 Latour, ripe, rich, and full. It's not surprising that Oz has been the International Wine Spirit Competition's Wine Communicator of the Year 2006. The book is the most readable technical wine book I've reviewed. At no point does it become boring, but at the same time, Oz manages to get through a reasonable amount of content in the book's 319 pages. Bordeaux is broadly divided up into two sections. The first 95 pages or so deal with an excellent overview that cover the grapes, wines, business, wine tourism, classification system, and my favourite section, the people of Bordeaux. Through this, and especially by looking at the people, Oz shows the history of Bordeaux, its current position, and highlights the styles and conflicts within Bordeaux. The second section gives details of each region and the key producers. Obviously, the first grapes get the most attention, but Oz also includes information about his favourite producers, even if they're not classified. For reading pleasure, the first section to me was the best. Here, Oz can get his teeth into some topics. I saw the second section more as a reference than an enjoyable read. The maps, and I'm a big map man, are okay, but given the supposed importance of soil and location in Bordeaux, I would have thought more maps would have been good, along with information about how the region's geological structures were formed, would have been good. But all in all, I thought this rates as the most readable wine reference book you can hope for. In the end, I gave it 88 out of 100. That ends this week's spotlight. Before we get into the interview, let's give some clues to the quote. When wine is in, the wit is out. I like the saying, but I think the wit can be improved by moderate consumption of wine. Now, to be honest, this person is a bit obscure. In fact, I'd say very obscure. But I'm going to give you some clues, and I'm going to finish with a cryptic clue to give you a chance. He started out as a British Protestant reformer from Norfolk, but in 1840 he was arrested for Protestant preaching and forced to recant. His luck came in when Edward VI came to the throne in 1547, and he was made chaplain of the Lord Protector. But when Queen Mary came to the throne in 1553, he was divested of his religious positions until Elizabeth came to power, and he made him canon of Canterbury Cathedral in 1559. Now, I don't think many people, if anybody, will get it from those clues. So here's a cryptic clue. His first name starts with T, and he's a doubting. The second name is a method of warning people, starting with B. Next up, we have the interview with Will Davenport on organic wines in England. Hi, I'm here with Will Davenport from Davenport Vineyards. How are you, Will?
Fine, thank you.
Is it William or Will?
Will.
Will?
Yeah.
Never been called William.
When I was a child, yeah.
Only when you're a bad boy.
Yeah.
Excellent. You're an organic producer. You're one of the few organic producers in the UK.
One of about five or six, I think.
Yeah. You're the biggest, though, aren't you?
Sorry?
Are you the biggest?
There's us and Settlescombe, the two that are sort of more commercial scale producers, yeah.
Okay, and how long have you been organic?
Since 2000. We started the three-year conversion thing in 2000, and then from 2003 the wines are fully organic.
And where's your vineyard based?
We've got two vineyards. One's in Sussex, just south of Tunbridge Wells, and the other one is in Kent, which is just the other side of Tunbridge Wells.
Okay, you're on chalk for both of them?
No. Sussex is on sandstone, and the Kent vineyard is a sort of sandy clay mixture.
Green sandstone or...?
It's the Sussex one's on Ashdown sand, which is a rock sandstone.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what's it like growing organics in the UK? Because I must admit, I do think you must be... Like, organic guys, I think, are a bit out there, but biodynamic guys are a bit further out, but growing organics in the UK, you've got to be bordering on a bit nutty.
It's a challenge, yeah. We have a wet climate in this country, and so we find... I think if you're in the south of France and stuff, the mildew control's a lot easier. In England, we tend to get lower yielding vineyards anyway. So, yeah. Doing it organically, you've got the mildew. If you don't get the mildew under control, you reduce the yields even further. And so, it's absolutely really hard work trying to keep on top of everything all the time. It's something you can't sort of go away for a week and leave it in the summer.
What sort of controls are you allowed to use for that?
We're allowed to spray sulphur.
Yep.
We're allowed to spray copper in certain conditions. The Soil Association will let us spray it if we ask their permission first and justify the use of it. And we're allowed to spray compost teas and nettle teas and comfrey liquid and things like that and seaweed solution and stuff. And that's it. It's a hard fight because the weather in this country is obviously humid and absolutely the right conditions to grow mildew in. Not,
I mean, 2007 must have been a really tough year.
Yeah, we had a tiny crop last year.
Yeah.
It was about less than half what we normally get.
Yep.
We found since 2000 when we went organic, the crops have been getting bigger and bigger because of the work we're doing on soil fertility. And then last year we suddenly had a huge drop, which is, you know, disappointment. You have to ride out the odd bad year.
Yeah, and for sure.
I hope we don't get another one next year. Two in a row would be hard.
Yeah.
But one bad year is something you have to factor in.
Yeah, two bad years could be...
Two bad years is not good. Yeah,
that could mean, especially in a credit crunch, borrowing money from the bank might be bad.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's not an organic problem, though. That's everybody deals with that one.
Yeah, sure. So you're allowed to do some spraying. Do you think that it's something that's manageable in the UK, or do you think you sometimes feel like you're really done yourself a disservice almost?
Well, we went organic. We spent 7 years not being organic, and yep. And I've always wanted to do it. And we went organic because we were doing half the work organically anyway, and there were only one or two things we were doing that weren't able to comply with the organic rules. I had a strong feeling that the quality of the wine would... I'm not going to say it would be better from being organic, but it would change, and the style of the wine changes because the if you manage your soil organically, the vines grow more healthily because there's more bacteria in the soil and all this, and so you end up with healthier vines which produce a different style of fruit. And we have found the wine styles changed amazingly since 2000. But straight away, the first year we did it, we found the wines were fruitier and softer, lower acids and so on. And I mean, I can't say that it's definitely because of the organic stuff, because the vines are also getting older, which improves their sort of flavours as well as the roots grow deeper. And it could have been a climate thing and all that, but I think the organics has got something to do with it. Because before we went organic, the wines were very lean and crisp, and they're now very soft. They've got more body to them. And so that's the reason why I did it.
Yep.
On the other side, we were finding we were having quite low yields in the vineyard anyway. And so we realised we had to do something with the soil to try and improve the yields. And I thought, if I'm going to do that, I want to do it using compost and manures and not using bought-in white powder fertiliser that I can just spread on the vineyard and stuff, because it's not a sustainable system. So we decided to go organic, and I think haven't really turned back since, actually. It's the wine's been improved, the yields have gone up slightly apart from last season, and we've had the old problems with mildew control, and our costs of running the vineyard have gone up. But
yeah, how much do you think they cost the extra being
well organic? it's in labor costs, really, because the chemicals that we use in the vineyard are about, I mean, they cost nothing. A bag of sulphur that would last 2 or 3 months, it cost £20, whereas before we were organic we were spending over £1,000 a year on chemicals to spray the vineyards. But the labour costs have probably doubled, so we're looking at a few £1,000 extra to run the vineyard. And the problem with labour costs and spray costs as well is that whether you get a high yield or a low yield, the cost of pruning is the same.
Sure.
So you still have to fork out the money to run the vineyard, to manage the vineyard, even if you've got a low yield. And last year, when we had a poor flower set, we knew at about the beginning of July that we were going to have very few grapes. And yet you can't just go, oh, well, we're not going to bother to look after the vines then, because if we'd let the disease come in, mildew come in last year, then we would have a huge fight this year.
Yeah, yeah, because it just hangs around, doesn't it?
Yeah, you get spores coming through the winter, and then the following year they all germinate, and you've got massive mildew problems starting in the spring. And so far, I think we've kept it quite clean, so I think this year we should do quite well. And,
yep. You mentioned you seem to follow the Soil Association as your organic... Is that the body that you're making your wines to?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any other options in the UK apart from the Soil Association?
Yeah, there are a few. There's organic farmers and growers who are a similar sort of organisation, and I think there are one or two others, I'm not sure. There are no actual rules on winemaking for organic winemaking in Europe. The European Union never designed rules for organic winemaking, which is why you'll find organic wines have got made from organically grown grapes written on them.
Yep.
You can't write organic wine on a wine label because it's illegal, because there's no rules for making organic wine.
So I always thought that was just due to the sulfur in the winemaking process.
Yeah, that's the main thing. I mean, what the Soil Association have done is they've said, well, as there are no rules, they've made up a few of their own and they've put in what they think is acceptable for organic winemaking. And the key difference, apart from some of the fining agents, which we're not allowed to use, the key difference is the sulfur levels are about half what a conventionally made wine would be allowed to use. We have to keep our sulfur levels below about 100 milligrams per litre.
Does that mean you're calling it organic wine, or you're still calling it wine made from organic grapes?
We have to call it wine made from organically grown grapes.
Yeah.
Which is a mouthful, yeah. You can get around it. You can call your vineyard, you know, Davenport Organic Vineyard or something, but we've decided not to do that. We're not marketing the wine heavily on it being organic.
Yeah.
I want people who try our wines to think that it's worth buying because it's nice wine, not because it's organic wine.
But are selling it through places like Vintage Roots who are...
Yeah. It is obviously being marketed through people who specialise in the organic wine field, because it would take me ages to go around all the organic restaurants and cafes and delicatessens, and they've obviously got those contacts built in, so we sell mostly through organic wholesalers and a little bit direct to trade and private customers as well. So,
Why did you choose Soil Association as opposed to the other guys?
Partly because Saddleskin, who are the main sort of commercial organic winery other than us in the UK, were all registered through them already, so they had experience of registering a UK winery. And partly because of the subscriptions that a producer has to pay to these organisations, which is normally around £500 to £1,000 a year, are about the same for whichever organisation you choose. But the Soil Association do a lot more lobbying and promotion of organic things, and I felt that I'd rather spend my money with them and have it used to promote organic awareness than spend it with someone who's just using it to run their administration systems.
Okay, sure. From my understanding, the EU sets sort of high-level rules about organics, and then Soil Association take those rules and then they adjust them for whatever they want to do, keeping the core concepts and the rules in place, and then maybe add more rules whatever they want to do.
That's right, and that happens not just in wine, but in chicken farming and free-range eggs and everything. They'll take the EU rules and then decide whether they want to go beyond that or not. But the minimum they have to comply with is the EU rules.
Can you export your wines to other countries now based on, and call it organic?
We've never tried to export. We don't need to. We're making about 20,000 bottles of wine a year, apart from last year when it was quite a lot smaller. But in a normal year, we make about 20,000 bottles a year. And we haven't had to export yet, so we sell it in the UK. We've had some interest from Japan and places, but... I feel if we can't supply the UK market properly, then there's no reason to expand into overseas markets.
Sure. Would you recommend going organic to other UK vineyards, or would you say no? Leave the space to me, or don't be nuts.
Well, I get asked by a lot of vineyard owners about whether it's worth doing, and it really depends on the vineyard owner or the vineyard manager as to whether they're really committed to it. You have to have a real understanding of what it's about and prepared to really think outside the box about how to do your job. I think if a vineyard owner came to me and said, I want to go organic because I'll make more money out of my wine, I'd say, no, don't even worry, don't even think about it, because the wines aren't, organic wines generally aren't a lot more expensive than non-organic wines, and there's a lot more work involved. You have to be really committed to be able to do it. But if someone was committed, I would say, yeah, have a go.
Committed or committable?
Yeah. Well,
I just find it hard in the UK thinking people grow grapes here organically.
I know. Well, I remember when I first started going organic, and a well-known wine writer came up to me and said, you know, you're growing grapes in England, it's a challenge, and you're making sparkling wine, which is quite a challenge, and then you want to do it all organically, you're mad. But it works.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. The wines are good.
I haven't tried your wines. They're not here today.
I haven't got them here today, no.
No, no.
No, we haven't. Well, we've just finished. We sold all our 2006 vintage about 4 months ago, and we haven't bottled our 2007s yet, so we weren't able to bring any wines up.
Does that tell you your pricing is maybe a bit wrong? Maybe you should have your prices a wee bit higher if you're selling out?
Some people have said that, yeah. But I think it depends how you price your wines. I mean, we look at what it costs to grow the grapes and make the wine, obviously, and we look at what you can buy in the global wine market at different price points, and then you decide where you think your wine fits in terms of quality. A good example is on the sparkling wine side. You're making a good quality sparkling wine. Do you sort of look at the big name champagne labels and go, oh, well, it's £30 a bottle? Or do you sort of go, well, say, well, there's some very good sparkling wines coming from New Zealand for half that? And I take the latter view, and I think we should be looking at, I mean, our sparkling wine is priced at between £15 and £20 a bottle, and I think that's where it should be.
You're not just growing grapes for yourself, you also make wines for some other people. I think at Dutchy,
yeah,
Charles?
We, in 2004, Dutchy Originals asked us to make them some wine, and we've had an ongoing relationship with them since then where we make their wine for them, and it's then sold under their label, but it's made by us. And yeah, it's really good. It's enabled us to increase production a little bit because we've got another label, and they have fantastic organisation, really nice people to work with, and it's been a really big success thing, I think, for us, and hopefully for them as well, because they make money out of every bottle that's sold as well.
Sure.
It was a bit of a risk when we first said yes to them, because you really don't know where it's going to go, but it's worked really well.
Have you met Prince Charles?
I'd like to expand it.
Have you met Prince Charles?
No, not yet, no.
You should get him to paint your labels.
He's tasted the wine. They won't sell the wine unless he's approved it, so he's tasted the wine and liked it.
I hear he likes to paint labels for bottles. The Mouton Rothschild label.
Oh,
he's
I don't
painted,
know.
So maybe you should get him to do.
Maybe I should. Maybe.
Do you sell your wines through any other channel? You've got yourselves, Dutchies.
Half the Dutchy wine is sold by them. They sold it into Sainsbury's. The first vintage that we made was sold to Sainsbury's. This year is going much more out to a wider range of smaller customers, and we had our own wine is sold through a couple of wholesalers and small independent wine shops, delicatessens, restaurants that contact me. I mean, it's quite a small range of outlets, but that we try and sort of go for the ones that fit our philosophy better.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up here. Cheers very much.
Brilliant, thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Will. There's some interesting things that Will does, such as putting up nettings to keep birds off his vines and using sugar and jam to catch wasps. Apparently, if you use honey, it gets too many bees. Next week, we're going to be talking with our old friend Richard Smart. He's been consulting in China for a couple of years now, and we're going to be talking to Richard about China. Before we close up, though, how are you getting on with that quote? When the wine is in, the wit is out. To work it out based on that cryptic clues, the first name starts with T, and he is a doubting Thomas. The second wine is a warning to people, a beacon. So it's Thomas Beacon. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.